Welcome to a special episode of Music for Life, a program which explores the purpose and value of music to humanity's enrichment. I'm Ryan Malone, concert manager for Armstrong Auditorium and host of this program. This is another one of our special episodes that I've titled Pre-Concert Talks, which air the week of a concert at Armstrong Auditorium here in Edmond, Oklahoma. We are coming up on our final event of the season here at Armstrong. This is Set Me as a Seal from my oratorio Song of Songs from the original unaccompanied version of this work, recorded in Armstrong Auditorium by the Philadelphia Singers of the Philadelphia Church of God. Since that 2012 recording, I have revised this work to include orchestra, and this new version will be premiered here at Armstrong Auditorium Thursday, April 7th, with professional orchestra and our Herbert W. Armstrong College Choral Union. This episode will serve as a pre-concert talk for that performance, and because this is about a composition of mine, this pre-concert talk will also be a talk with the composer. In it, we will explore this work, its musical elements, and its timeless story to be presented here at Armstrong. When Armstrong Auditorium opened in the fall of 2010, the inaugural concert was a grand event. In addition to the unveiling ceremonies, speeches, and other receptions, the main feature of that weekend was a performance of Felix Mendelssohn's oratorio Elijah. The debut concert for the hall was performed by the Herbert W. Armstrong College Choral Union, which had a membership of about 120 to match the power of the Romantic-era-sized orchestra that Mendelssohn's work requires. 2 years later, the Herbert W. Armstrong College Choral Union performed Brahms' Requiem and Handel's Coronation Anthems. 2 seasons after that, we closed the 2013-14 season with an unabridged performance of Handel's Messiah. Keeping with its usual 2-year rotation, the Choral Union has been working this academic year on the finale for this 2015-16 season. The choral orchestral work that they will be presenting this season, Song of Songs, is a work divided into 33 movements, 18 movements in Part 1 and 15 movements in Part 2. The whole work runs about 95 minutes, not including intermission. Upon an initial surface reading, the Song of Solomon may just appear to be a collection of romantic poetry. But upon deeper study, a story or a plot emerges, as do its central characters. The Song of Solomon, or as its first verse dubs it, the Song of Songs, is about an unfaithful woman and her true love's attempt to woo her back. This woman, in this text, is called the Shulamite, and she desires both an affair with a worldly king and all his wealth, while naively thinking she can maintain her relationship with her own husband, whom she commonly refers to as her beloved. It's as though this Shulamite, her beloved says, is dancing for two opposing armies. Taking her beloved for granted, this double-minded bride eventually awakens to his absence. She finally forsakes her adultery and puts her singular focus back on him to the point of being able to die for their love. "For love is strong as death," she declares. This really is the greatest love song of all time, some of the greatest of the biblical Hebrew poetry. In it, the Shulamite's journey to repentance parallels King Solomon's own. The Bible says he had turned from God to a life of materialistic decadence until he realized the error of his ways. He saw God's unending love for him despite his spiritual complacency and apostasy. Despite the tribulation that his actions brought him, he saw the glory that awaited him in the relationship with his beloved that could be found in no other earthly bond. No matter what one's faith or creed, the timelessness and universality of this heartrending allegory are unquestionable. A story of unfaithfulness on one side and unconditional love on the other, a story of betrayal and loss, but also of forgiveness and redemption. The text of this work is in English and is based on an amalgamation of several English translations with slight adaptations to fit into a song-like meter. Also, if you look through the text, you'll see there are several strange Hebrew words or locations that would have little meaning to the modern listener. For instance, Song 4, verse 8 reads, "Come with me from Lebanon, my spouse, with me from Lebanon. Look from the top of Amana, from the top of Shenir and Hermon, from the lion's dens, from the mountains of the leopards." Amana literally means the source of the mountain stream. Based on what Amana was, instead of singing the phrase, "from the top of Amana," the line that is sung is, "from the source of the mountain stream." Also, Shenir was a snow-capped mountain, and Hermon literally means sanctuary. So for those two locations, the text that is sung reads, "from the peak of snow-capped refuge." So these tweaks in the translation help convey the image of what those Hebrew locations would have given to the listener 3,000 years ago. A more common phrase from this book is, "I am the rose of Sharon and the lily of the valley." Sharon was a plain, and we don't readily relate that name to that type of topography, so instead of that phrase, we sing, "I am the rose of the plain, the lily of the valley." That's even how the Anchor Bible translates this verse anyway. So these adjustments help make the imagery even more relevant to our present-day ears. A couple other peculiarities to the text that I'd like to mention here. There are a couple of phrases in here that might sound a little strange in modern English, but I want to help explain those. One of the most beautiful concepts in this work is the husband's praise of his wife in the song, "My Sister, My Bride." Now, this is not about incest. It's about a man who grows to love a woman first as a sister in a pure familial way, and then the love grows into a more marital love. Another peculiar phrase to us might be the phrase, "We have a little sister, and she has no breasts." The breasts of the female are a metaphor, though, in this work, for her maturity. In this sacred allegory, this woman has had to do some maturing spiritually and not go back to her immature ways of viewing her relationship. As I stated earlier, this text clearly conveys a story flow and character development, and I want to talk about these characters. First, there is the beloved, or the bridegroom, you could say, the husband who's trying to woo back his bride. There's the Shulamite woman, what we would call the unfaithful or double-minded bride. Though the beloved only calls her Shulamite in one passage, he also calls her sister, bride, dove, love. And then there's a group known as the Daughters of Jerusalem, who the Shulamite always tries to impress and whose approval she always seems to seek. There's also text carried by someone who is neither the beloved or the Shulamite, more of a narrative capacity. I've called this character simply the narrator. Now, this text in most Bibles is written in prose form, just one verse after another, but if you look at it like a libretto, that is, the words to an oratorio, opera, or longer vocal work, you see passages that were meant for this character and other passages that were meant for another character. You also see the double-minded nature of the Shulamite. All these things become clear. The lyrics begin in verse 2 of the biblical book's first chapter. Song 1 verses 2 to 3 read, "Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is better than wine. Because of the savor of your good ointments, your name is as ointment poured forth. Therefore do the virgins love you." This is the Shulamite, and throughout the work she is either talking about her beloved, as in the phrase, "Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth," or she is talking to her beloved, as in the immediate point of view switch, "For your love is better than wine." These changes in point of view are clearly intentional, and they show her double-mindedness. This is depicted musically by the voices I've selected to represent this character. The soprano soloist represents the words sung to the husband, and the chorus represents the words sung about the husband. And if there's any doubt to which character is speaking, she always calls him "my beloved," which is a masculine noun in Hebrew, whereas he calls her "my love," which is a feminine noun in Hebrew. The beloved is therefore represented musically and vocally by a baritone soloist. Another set of texts that makes much more sense when you understand it as song lyrics is Song 1, verses 15 through 17. It might initially appear confusing as to the point of view, but notice it reads, "Behold, you are fair, my love. Behold, you are fair. You have dove's eyes. Behold, you are fair, my beloved. Yes, pleasant. Also, our bed is green," or luxuriant. "The beams of our house are cedar, and our rafters of fir." This is clearly a duet between the beloved, the baritone, and the Shulamite, the soprano soloist in this case, since she's addressing him, the beloved. He calls her my love, and she calls him my beloved, and afterward the text starts using the possessive plural pronoun, our. So they are singing together in this passage, which is how I set this duet. Let's hear a recording of this movement. This is the sixth movement of the work, Behold, You Are Beautiful.
Behold, you are beautiful, are beautiful, my love.
Behold, you are beautiful, are beautiful, my beloved.
Behold, you are beautiful, your eyes are dove.
Behold, you are beautiful, truly pleasant.
Behold, you are beautiful, your eyes are
pleasant. Our bed has grown luxuriant, our dwelling beams are cedar,
our dwelling beams are cedar, our rafters made of cypress, made of cypress. Behold, you are beautiful, 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 my beloved.
That was the sixth movement of Song of Songs, Behold, You Are Beautiful. That was Paula Malone as soprano soloist and the composer as baritone soloist in that 2012 recording of this work. We are premiering a new rendition of this work Thursday, April 7th, 2016 at Armstrong Auditorium. This program is a pre-concert talk and a talk with the composer for that event. But as you heard there, we have a recording of an earlier version of this work. See, the original oratorio was scored for unaccompanied chorus and soloists. The version we're premiering April 7th has been scored to include string orchestra, but I will occasionally be using the original a cappella recording to demonstrate a couple things about this work. I played that duet to show how the text of Song of Songs in those verses clearly indicated the two main characters of the story singing together. Examining the text of this biblical book, it's easy to see where the characters shift. Sometimes the bridegroom or husband is singing to his bride. Sometimes the bride or Shulamite is singing to her husband, or sometimes she's singing about him. For this work, the soprano represents her words to the beloved, and the chorus sings her words about the beloved. And oftentimes when that happens, the chorus is addressing these daughters of Jerusalem. In the first chapter, she tells them, "She is black but lovely." The meaning of that phrase is that she's justifying to these daughters of Jerusalem why she's so sunburned, basically. It's because other members of her family made her work in their vineyard, and the extra time in the sun scorched her skin. But she insists she is still lovely. In Song of Songs chapter 5, she's at a point where she can't find her beloved anymore. She's not under his protection and now finds herself beaten and partially disrobed in the city streets. Now, longing to find him and to return to him exclusively, she says to these daughters, "I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, if you find my beloved, that you tell him that I am sick of love." She's sick of the love that she's espoused recently and is ready for his undying love. The next verse is clearly the daughters replying to her, "What is your beloved more than another, O fairest among women? What is your beloved more than another that you so charge us?" Nearly every time she addresses the Daughters of Jerusalem, they say something back to her. In the music, I scored this as a two-part female line. This small group of female voices helps distinguish this character from the full sound of the choir. And at this point in the story, you hear this conversation between the full choir, the Shulamite, and the small female ensemble, the Daughters of Jerusalem. So the daughters have said essentially, "What's so special about your beloved more than the others?" And the bride replies with an epic enumeration of all the traits that her beloved possesses in a movement titled The Chief Among 10,000. The text uttered as a refrain in this movement is, "He is the chief among 10,000. This is my beloved, and this is my friend, O daughters of Jerusalem." After this chorus, the daughters of Jerusalem are so enamored by her description of him that they declare they would like to help her find her beloved too. This makes for such a beautiful musical conversation. You get the sense from this text that she has been somewhat ashamed of her husband to this point. Now she openly praises him to her peers, as she declares to her beloved later that when she finds him, she will kiss him for all to see, and no one would despise her for it. In other words, she doesn't care what anyone thinks of their relationship. We also hear that idea reiterated in the Set Me as a Seal movement, where she says, "If a man would give all riches of his house for love, would he be despised?" The subtext being, "Who cares what others think about what we have?" This portion of the story, which is the majority of part two of this oratorio, is about this turn back to her beloved. After that climactic Set Me as a Seal movement, she sings a chorus about forsaking her immaturity and boarding up any path in her life that draws her away from her beloved. The final declaration of this repentance is found in the second-to-last movement, where she addresses Solomon, the name that represents the worldly king with whom she was committing adultery. She was so concerned about the physical wealth she could glean from that relationship, but in the end she realizes none of it was worth it. She has metaphorically been working in Solomon's vineyard and forsaking her own. Now she realizes that none of the profits from Solomon's vineyard are worth the lifestyle she has been leading. Listen to that in this penultimate movement. This is from the original 2012 a cappella recording. The narrator begins this movement talking about Solomon's vineyard, and then she declares that she will finally forsake the wealth from that vineyard to focus on her most important priorities.
Each one for its fruit would bring 1,000 silver pieces. Each one for its fruit would bring 1,000 silver pieces. 1,000 silver pieces.
That was tenor Joel Hilliker singing the narrator role, and the Philadelphia Singers of the Philadelphia Church of God singing the role of the Shulamite chorus in that movement called Solomon's Vineyard, the moment in the Song of Songs story where the unfaithful bride forsakes the wealth of her affair with a worldly king and goes back to her one true beloved. You are listening to a special episode of Music for Life on KPCG. I'm Ryan Malone, concert manager for Armstrong Auditorium and host for the program. We are discussing the premiere of the oratorio Song of Songs, which will be presented at Armstrong Auditorium here in Edmond, Oklahoma, Thursday, April 7th, 2016, performed by the Herbert W. Armstrong College Choral Union with conductor Mark Jenkins and professional orchestra. This program is another of our pre-concert talks for the various performances here at Armstrong. For this 2015-16 season, this is our last pre-concert talk, since this is the final performance of this particular season here. And because this is about a composition of mine, this particular pre-concert talk is also a talk with the composer, if you will. Now, let's talk about some of the more specific musical elements that are contained in this work, specific things to listen for that tie this oratorio together. This will make for a much more enriching experience, I think. For that, let's go to the stage of Armstrong Auditorium, where I have the Herbert W. Armstrong College Choral Union with me. Sometimes on this program, I'll be at the piano here to demonstrate and explain some musical ideas contained in the pieces we're listening to. Today, I'm in front of the Herbert W. Armstrong College Choral Union, and they will serve as my piano, or my demonstration instrument for this segment. I also have a piano here to help illustrate some of the instrumental elements. The main things I want to discuss here in terms of this work are the unifying musical elements. Any work of concert music is usually based on just a handful of musical ideas, just a handful of what we call motives. Even when it comes to a full-length work like an opera or an oratorio that's anywhere from, say, 90 minutes to 3 hours long, they'll have these unifying elements. And I think if you can identify these recurring handful of musical ideas, it makes for a much more rewarding listening experience. From the very first notes of the work, we hear a motive or a musical idea that will continue to be repeated throughout the entire work. What happens is this. The violins play two different notes that are a fifth apart, or five notes apart. From there, the higher note descends a step and then ascends back to the original note. The bottom note does the opposite. It goes up a step and then back down to the original note. Played together, this means we start with an interval of a fifth, it moves inward to a third, and then back to the fifth. So it sounds like this. After those three opening intervals, that idea continues through the rest of the instrumental introduction. Then the choir comes in with the same motive on the phrase, "Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth." You hear that musical idea in the opening soprano alto statement of the words, "Let him kiss."
Let him kiss.
4 bars later, the tenors and basses join and do the same thing on those words, "Let him kiss." So the opening sounds like this.
Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth.
And if you listen to this entire work, you'll hear how this little motive is the basis for several other key moments in the work. The opening of the second movement, "Let Us Run," starts with the soprano soloist singing the upper note of this motive, but much faster than it was presented in the first movement.
Draw me after you, let us run.
She is echoed by the violins playing it at the same quick new tempo. This motive happens in the final movement as well, which we'll talk about and I'll demonstrate later. This motive also occurs in inverted form later in the work. That means it starts on an interval called a third, and then each note of that interval goes out a step and then comes back in. This is how the opening 9 bars of movement 4 are structured. This movement starts with a soprano solo, and listen to this motive being utilized in the accompaniment figure provided by the low strings.
Tell me, oh you, my soul loves. Tell me, oh you, my soul loves.
This inverted idea also occurs in the climactic movement of the whole work, Set Me as a Seal. Since this is the work that embodies the unfaithful Shulamite's repentance, I thought an inversion or a reversal of the main idea would be appropriate in this context. So listen to the opening of this movement. You'll hear the inverted motive on the words set me and on your.
Set me as a seal upon your heart.
The motive is properly in the soprano and alto part.
Set me.
This inverted motive is even easier to hear in this movement's middle section, where the text reads, "Many waters cannot quench love, nor can rivers drown it." You'll hear it on the word many and in the words nor can.
Many waters cannot quench love, nor can rivers drown it.
So that's one of the main musical motives or note sequences that commonly repeats throughout this 95-minute oratorio. Another recurring musical idea is a particular chord progression. It sounds like this. And it's explicitly heard in the choir toward the end of part one, where they sing the phrase, "Eat, O friends." But it also occurs in the middle of this lyrical phrase in the seventh movement titled "As the Lily."
With great delight I sat in his shade.
Perhaps you caught that three chord progression in the phrase "sat in his shade."
Sat in his shade.
Later in this movement, I use this chord progression for the phrase "sustain me with raisins." This distinctive three-chord idea comes back in a peppier way in the lively ninth movement called "The Voice of My Beloved." Here it is in the phrase, "Behold, he comes," specifically on the syllables, "Hold, he comes."
Behold, he comes. Behold, he comes. Behold, he comes. Behold, he comes.
So those are some of the recurring musical ideas that occur throughout the piece that aren't tied to any specific text. But there are so many phrases of the text that are repeated frequently throughout this entire book. Sometimes it's just a little phrase of text, like the words, "O daughters of Jerusalem." Nearly every time that phrase is uttered, you hear this melody. Here it is in the third movement, right at the beginning. Listen for it in the soprano or highest part. You'll hear it in the eighth movement called "Awake Not Love," which I'll play a little later. So your ear might pick that up when you hear the words, "O daughters of Jerusalem." You'll also hear it in the two reprises of "Awake Not Love" that occur throughout the work. You'll also hear it in the narrator solo in movement 15.
By the daughters of Jerusalem.
And then you hear the daughters of Jerusalem motive again in the choir, in the intense movement titled "The Watchman Smote Me."
Remove my cloak from me. I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem. O daughters of Jerusalem. If you find my beloved.
Another commonly repeated phrase of text is, "My beloved is like a gazelle or a young hart." Every time this phrase repeats, it sounds the same. Here it is in movement 9, the voice of my beloved.
My beloved is like a gazelle or a young hart. My beloved is like a gazelle or a young hart. The voice of my beloved, the voice of my beloved.
In movement 12, when the phrase like a gazelle or a young hart occurs, it's the same musical idea. Here's the lead up to that phrase. This also occurs in the final movement, which we will hear at the end of the program and which I'll explain at that time. Now, the musical idea for the short phrase, "My beloved," which is the phrase that usually begins this line of text, is nearly that same ascending motive throughout the entire work. The beginning of the fugue in movement 12, "My beloved is mine and I am his, he feeds among the lilies," sounds like this. We also hear the motive for "My beloved" at the opening of movement 22.
My beloved is growing bright with rosy cheeks.
We hear it in the following movement.
My beloved has descended.
And it also occurs back in one of the earlier movements, the fifth movement. So these are some short textual ideas that are repeated throughout the work. But there are also larger swaths of text that repeat. This is the text of this biblical book indicating a reprise of a particular song. In a musical production, text is often reprised later to show how the character has developed. They sing the same text, but because of what they've been through, it means something different to them and the audience this second time around. I specifically call two movements of this work reprises of earlier movements. Awake Not Love contains text that comes up twice later, and so that material repeats with slightly different words. Let's listen to this group sing the original statement of this group of text. This is the eighth movement of Song of Songs.
Yeah.
In the first version, she says, his left hand is under my head, his right hand embraces me. In the final reprise of that, she says, his left hand should be under my head, his right hand should embrace me. This last time around, she realizes her mistake. She thought her husband was with her all along. Now she realizes he should have been there, but he wasn't. Earlier in the program, we heard the soprano baritone duet, Behold, You Are Beautiful. This melody is restated in the cello opening of Movement 16. In this particular orchestration, there are a lot of cello baritone duets. The cello helps give some extra added lyricism to the baritone solos. This melody is also heard in the husband's opening line when he repeats the same text in that movement. It's also used in the opening of Movement 26, How Fair and Pleasant. Some of the husband's specific enumerations of her beauty occur early in the work, and then some occur later. This can be heard in the similarities between Movement 16, All Fair You Are, the movement called She Is the Only One, and the one called How Fair and Pleasant. In all three of those, you'll hear this melody to accompany phrases that speak of her beauty. When the daughters of Jerusalem pose a question in Movement 14, who comes from the plains? This material is repeated later when they similarly ask, who comes from the wilderness? Three of the beloved's calls to actions are reprised in three separate movements that are spread throughout the work. It's like three displaced verses of one song. Movement 19, My Beloved Knocks, contains a lot of reprised material because so much of the text has been uttered before. When they say, the voice of my beloved, that's a reprise of the same rhythm that was the basis of Movement 9.
Knock, the voice of my beloved who knocks. The voice of my beloved who knocks. The voice of my beloved who knocks.
And the voice she hears is her husband saying, open to me, my sister, my love. So there, I reprise the melody of my sister, my bride. When she gives excuses as to why she can't come to the door, I'm already undressed, I've already washed my feet, I use the same musical material as in the third movement when she gave excuses as to why she was so sunburned. In Movement 3, she says, stare not at my darkness, the sun has scorched my skin. So in Movement 19, when she uses these new excuses, we hear this same material, but on different words. Then when she finally arises to go to the door, she says, I arose to open to him, and I reprise the same melody that the husband sang when he said, arise, my love, my fair one. Next, she opens the door. He's not there, and she looks for him and can't find him. The choir reprises the same material that they sang in the movement, I Sought Him. Here's the end of Movement 19.
Thank you.
In movement 23, she uses the phrase, to feed his flock and gather lilies there, as well as the phrase, who feeds his flock among the lilies there. And so I reprise the section of the fugal subject we heard in movement 12, which said, he feeds among the lilies. You heard this phrase in that fugal subject. But then it sounds like this when similar text comes back in the full choir. The phrase, until the breath of day when shadows flee away, occurs in the fugue of movement 12.
Until the breath of day when shadows flee away.
But then the phrase is repeated in the baritone solo just a few movements later, movement 16, so the same tune is used for both of those movements. And then even later, when the daughters of Jerusalem ask, who is this looking toward the dawn, since the text is explicitly about the dawn, which is what the breath of day phrase was about, I use the same motive. Here are the daughters of Jerusalem singing that phrase. One more thing I'd like to talk about in this work that might be helpful for the listener is the amount of layering there is of melodic ideas. Musicians refer to this as a polyphonic texture, many different melodic ideas happening at the same time to give a certain density to the texture. Now, in vocal music, that means different words at different times, but rest assured that any time this happens, you still will be able to understand the words because they are repeated so often. You'll also have a copy of the lyrics as part of the program insert. At least four of the works in the 33 movements are treated like a fugue, the most common form of polyphonic texture in the fine art repertoire. This is like a complex round. The same text is repeated through different sections, but at different times. The opening of the seventh movement is a fugue. When the sopranos state the opening theme or subject, I am the rose of the plain, the lily of the valley. The opening of the second half is also a fugue. The altos state the subject on the text, I sleep, but my heart is awake. Let's listen to what would be called the exposition of this fugue. Listen to the heartbeat-like accompaniment in what would be the low strings. Now, two of these fugues have a couple of unique points of interest. The second movement utilizes this fugal subject as stated first by the tenors.
The king has brought me into his chambers.
This is just after the soprano soloist sings this material, which we heard earlier. Now, this solo motive gets placed on top of the fugue after each part has stated the main theme, which adds even more complexity to the sound. Then at the end, the soprano solo sings this theme while the tenors and basses sing the fugal subject and while the sopranos and altos sing the opening theme from the first movement. Listen to the layering of these three musical ideas.
Let us run.
An even more complex example of layering is found in movement 12, which I've already demonstrated quite a bit. Once the main theme is presented in all four parts on the text, My Beloved is Mine and I Am His, which we've already heard demonstrated, then the sopranos come in with that text we also heard demonstrated earlier, Until the Breath of Day. Another theme is presented on the text, Turn My Beloved.
Turn My Beloved.
And yet another theme is presented for the text, On the Divided Mountains.
On the Divided Mountains.
Once all four of these themes are presented, all four of them are layered in the second half of this movement. Let's hear it now. I'm actually going to play this from the original unaccompanied recording of the Philadelphia Church of God's Philadelphia Singers.
You are listening to a special episode of Music for Life on KPCG. I'm Ryan Malone, concert manager for Armstrong Auditorium and host for the program. We have been discussing the premiere of the oratorio Song of Songs, which will be presented at Armstrong Auditorium here in Edmond, Oklahoma, Thursday, April 7th, 2016, performed by the Herbert W. Armstrong College Choral Union with Mark Jenkins, conductor, and professional orchestra. This program is another of our pre-concert talks for the various performances we have throughout the season at Armstrong. And for this 2015-16 season, this is our last pre-concert talk. since this is the final performance of this particular season here. That was a recording of the Philadelphia Church of God's Philadelphia Singers with conductor Mark Jenkins singing that movement of Song of Songs in its original unaccompanied form. That was the movement, My Beloved is Mine, where four different melodic ideas are presented in the first couple of sections of the work. And then in the final section, they are all layered. For more information about this performance, you can visit armstrongauditorium.org. You can also tweet or post about this event using the hashtag Song of Songs, all one word. The original a cappella album of Song of Songs is also available on iTunes, Spotify, and other digital outlets, and there is also a Facebook page set up for that album, links for which will be put in today's show notes. This particular episode of Music for Life is not only the last pre-concert talk of the season, it will also serve as the final Music for Life episode of this first season of our program. We plan to resume new episodes with a second season starting later this summer. We will keep tweeting and posting interesting links about our program throughout the year, though, at Music for Life PCG. Or you can like us on Facebook for updates at facebook.com/musicforlifepcg. We will conclude today's program with the final movement of Song of Songs. This is from the original a cappella or unaccompanied version of the oratorio with conductor Mark Jenkins, soprano Paula Malone, and the Philadelphia Singers of the Philadelphia Church of God, an amateur chorus, basically, that took on this epic task. Hopefully when you listen this time, you'll hear an amalgamation of all the things we've talked about on today's show. You'll notice the soprano and chorus, both of which represent the double-minded Shulamite bride. They are singing the same point of view now, because they are both singing to the beloved. You'll also hear the text-based motive for the phrase, My Beloved.
My beloved.
And you hear that in the phrase, Make haste, my beloved. You'll also hear the main repeating motive that occurs throughout the work, the fifth into the third, out to the fifth, in the accompaniment to that phrase.
Make haste, make haste.
As well as at the very end when the soprano sings her final line.
Make haste, my beloved.
And then this commonly repeated chord progression. This chord progression manifests itself in the phrase where the choir and soprano sing, On the Mountains of Spices. And you'll hear the recurring motive based on the text, Like a Gazelle or a Young Heart. So here it is, the finale of Song of Songs, Make Haste, My Beloved, and I hope to see you at Armstrong for the premiere.
Spices on the mountains of spices.
have been listening to Music for Life from the Herbert W. Armstrong College campus. I'm Ryan Malone. Thanks for joining me.